Hi, I am your host, Brent Feldman, and we are back with another episode of Mix and Matchbox. Today, we are joined again by Nathan Hawks. He is the president of Arcane Marketing, and Nathan is back to do an experiment on this podcast. We're going to have kind of an open conversation about a couple of topics and jump into some things and get a lot of thoughts out there, but have some interesting, fun things to chat about and can't wait to do it. So, hey, Nathan, how's it going again?
Good. It's good to be back. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely good to have you back and happy to, you know, chat about some of these things. We've talked a long time at length, probably about, you know, things like this. And now is our chance to do it on the podcast. So, I'll put out the first topic. And, I know that we've been stewing on some of these ideas or, just always have them on the tip of our tongue of how to, you know, what we think about them, but I'll put the first one out there, which is, what are things that most people miss when it comes to digital marketing?
Man, that's a Pandora's box,
right?
And it's similar to asking, let's say a contractor, hey, how much does a house cost? Yeah. And you know, there's a whole bunch of little refining pieces that would answer that question. I think that on my mind, having done this for 18 years at this point, I think that there is something that is still plaguing a lot of people. And if I had to give, I don't want to say a warning, but like an advisory to people who are looking to hire a digital marketing agency, I think one thing that has been getting under my skin a little bit are those people that are out there who they run, you know, $499 a month packages for SEO or $199, or hey, just sign up to my software, let it do the whole thing. And the reality is if you really think about all of the pieces that go into digital marketing, from research to figuring out exactly what you're going to do, to the strategy that you lay out, to the execution of all of those pieces, whether it's creating a video, making some creative for some ads, writing some content, optimizing a page, whether it's for SEO or specifically for a landing page from paid search or social media ads. I mean, there is so much that goes into digital marketing. And I think a couple of pieces that I wish that everybody understood is that there is not a way to cheat to get there. And it's not a simple solution. And a fair number of our clients, and you know, we have a couple hundred clients, I would say a fair number of them have all gone through the same mistake of hiring these cheapo package digital marketing agencies. And look, I'm not saying that they don't provide some value, but it's certainly not enough to win at the game. And you're going to move on. And is it money that's even worth spending with the amount of problems and issues we've had to solve and correct? Absolutely not. Skip it and do stuff on your own. You'd be maybe even more effective than hiring some of these other companies. But here's the reason why. And I think the point I'm trying to get to with my thoughts are the piece that I would say most agencies miss out on overall. So I think there's really good agencies that are going through the motions, and I think they're missing the back end piece, whether it's out of ignorance, which we talked a little bit about last time, mm-hmm. or if it's out of because they don't know, or because they don't have the processes, or because they're just simply lazy. But it's got to be off of what is the value in what you're doing. So I think that sometimes people go, oh, I just know I need to post on social media, whether it's Facebook or Instagram or TikTok. I just know I need to post you know, three times a week. And then you might ask them, well, why? And they go, I don't know. I just know that that's what you're supposed to do. And so what you find is that they're going through these motions, they're giving effort without the meaning behind the effort. And so I think that you'll find that there are these agencies that go, oh, well, we're just going to build links, or we're just going to write content. or we're, you know, and even in that, we've got AI that helps us write the content. And you go, well, why? Why are we putting up a blog post? What does it do for you? What is the actual purpose? And I don't think that most people can actually answer that with a real answer. And so I think that what most people actually miss, having given that extensive preemptive piece to what I've been saying, is value-based marketing. And value-based marketing is knowing the rhyme or reason why you do an activity. And I think one of my favorite pieces of marketing is that everything can be solved or figured out logically. It removes all of those I think and I feel pieces, right? There's a lot of data that's out there, and you can use the data and start working on pieces of your marketing strategy based off of what the data says. But I think that a lot of people are just going through the motions of producing what's the quickest and easiest rather than doing it the right way. Mm-hmm. And the right way is, what value does this activity provide to your audience?
Yeah.
There's probably a lot to unpack from just that statement, but
there that's is. Where I was going with it. Yeah, no, I like it a lot. And definitely, I mean, there's so many of those kind of fly by night vendors that are going through the motions. They're quote unquote taking the steps, the things that they, you know, that are theoretically good to do. But at the same time, are they, just like you said, are they adding value? And one of the things that was sitting on the back of my mind is like, you know, just, you know, and I think this goes along with it, but it's like setting KPIs that are meaningful. I heard a client the other day tout that, you know, hey, we got a whole bunch more visibility on this keyword. Okay, that's good. That is good. And that's progress. Like, I don't want to, like, you know, say that that's not progress, because that obviously is. That can, that traction can feel positive. But what's the end result that you want that person to do? I mean, like, them coming to your website, it's kind of like somebody coming to your store not buying anything. Like, that's cool, but what did you want them to do? Did you want to get a contact form request? Did you want them to purchase something? You know, making progress on a keyword only means so much. And just as much as I want to say that, yes, look for that as a sign of success, but maybe not performance. And that's where, if you're looking for performance, there's other ways to set meaningful goals and KPIs that are associated with things that actually mean something to your bottom line at the end of the day. It's something that I think definitely can be missed by not only maybe the companies, but, you know, even agencies that are providing some of these services, because they're not, you know, maybe thinking about the right factors that actually makes their service meaningful.
Well, and another aspect I think of value-based marketing is that a lot of times, going back to these companies that offer a low cost, quick and dirty service, is that they say, oh, well, you know, we'll provide X amount of blog posts or Google business profile posts or local citations. Like, everything's already quantified out before you sign up. And it doesn't mean that the things they're offering aren't good things, but how do you know that's where you need to spend your time and energy and money to get results? What I found is, we, in order to accurately bid on a project, we set an end goal and we say, what is it going to take to get to this end goal? And so somebody may be doing, say, $1 million in revenue a year, and here's how they're doing it, and here's how that breakdown is. But maybe they want to do, you know, 1.25 million by the end of the year. So they want to grow 25%. Great. So what are the steps that are needed to make that happen? And then you know where you're doing well or where you're lacking based on what your competition is doing. And so there may be, well, we call it a SWOT analysis, right? It's pretty common. And when you find out what your competitors are doing, you can find out where your deficiencies are and where your strengths are. Well, if you've already got strengths, continue to push on those strengths isn't going to move the needle much. But where you find that you can get quick wins or low-hanging fruit is when you work on your deficiencies, the places where you're weak compared to your competitors. You can't, it's the old adage of correlation is not causation. And, you know, you can't say, hey, this competitor of mine has 200 blog posts on their website and I only have 50. So if I can catch up to them by writing 150 blog posts, theoretically I should be in the same place. I would argue that you probably don't even need that many blog posts to beat the pants off of them. But you can't just say, here's this one factor. And so here's why I think I need to make this happen. And so that's one of the reasons why packages typically just don't work, is it's based off of a set of preconceived things that, yeah, they're okay. And they might move the needle, but it might not be what you need. And it's not going to give you that extra growth. Whereas you can produce better and fewer things, and they may come a little higher cost, but then they're going to return a whole lot more value to you. So, you know, value-based marketing isn't just going through the motions of doing things. It's what is it that you're doing to help your audience? I would say solve a problem or learn something. And once you've established yourself as an authority on a topic or a solution, that's a great guide for what's value-based marketing. Just putting up a post just because on Facebook or on Instagram, yeah, okay. but the value you get from that without having an intent for why you're posting what you're posting and when you're posting and how often you're posting and what it is you're actually looking for or asking your audience to do, I think that a lot of people just miss on some big factors and they just go through the motions.
Absolutely. Ooh, all right. Hold on. I'm going to touch on something that you and I think talked about offline, but it was the fact that, you know, there's, you know, just as you're talking about packages here, there's also not a one size fits all plan, or maybe the plan that you kind of like initially kind of conceive doesn't always wind up where it, you know, it maybe was initially sort of focused to be. And what I mean is that, you know, like we get so much data, you know, as, you know, SEO people, whether it's from our tools, you know, from, you know, SEMrush or a Google Analytics or, you know, like a customer insight and data that they might provide us through, you know, what's happening through their sales channels. But I think that those things can lead us on a different path that we feel like may be more beneficial than, you know, maybe the path we initially envisaged. So I think there's a thing of also, you know, as you have, you know, as people might get into a relationship with an SEO agency, it's to trust that, you know, like at the end of the day, you know, a job of the SEO agency is to put forth and follow the paths that are going to bring about the most value, you know, kind of and that may be, you know, diverting a path, but it's listening to the data. It's, you know, how do we follow that more effectively? And it's not necessarily something where you can be like, hey, we know everything what to do day one. We're going to make assumptions. We're going to test them. And we're going to follow them through and find out what could work better next time. It is like it's like science. You know, you're testing a hypothesis, you're putting that out there, and you're seeing how that carries through. But really, if there's data that may lead you in another direction, that's not a bad thing, you know, and that's not to say that your original assumption might have been, you know, wasn't well-meaning, but data will lead you some places, you know, other than where you initially thought. And I feel like having that sort of like, you know, trust in your SEO agency to be leading you to the right place, that ultimate destination of like, you know, success and you know, yielding great results. It's a partnership that is built on trust, and you can't make that out of a $2.99 per month package or something. It's you know, it's a lot of guess and check, and it's a lot of work.
Well, and on that front, I found that I often have opinions about, oh, hey, I think we ought to look going this direction, and then we develop information and the data just tells a different story. And so for us to be flexible and agile to find that that we need to make a shift a little bit, maybe a little left to center of where we were aiming for, oftentimes you'll find some of those little successful pieces. The other piece is that I think sometimes agencies miss out on really getting to know their client and what the client wants and what they really need. And I think a lot of times I have found, even with legit agencies, that they go, hey, this is what we want for you. And so we're going to work on this, but it may not be what the client wants. And so just the other day, we were onboarding a brand new client and we just said, hey, to start off this onboarding, why don't you talk to us about your business? Tell us what you've done well in the past and tell us where you feel like you're weak. And then tell us what's an ideal goal or what is it that you want to have happen by, you know, with this relationship, where do you want to see it go? And you can give the standard primary answers of, oh, well, I just want to rank better, or I want to grow my revenue, or I want to hire more employees. Like, but I think drilling down on why and what is it that drives that. And sometimes for us, that comes down to asking questions like, what is your bread and butter? Like, what is it that you do all the time? What supports your revenue on a regular basis? What do you find is just normal? And if you could adjust it or shift it, where would you want the attention, right? What's the 20% that you do that gives you the 80% of your revenue? And we try to drill down on those real specifically, because that makes a big difference. And then we can hit on those pieces. Now, we may find it that that's not exactly true, and the data will tell us interesting information, but rather than us telling the client, this is what you need and this is what we want to do for you, I think that a lot of agencies, without even realizing it, try to, I don't want to say force or pigeonhole, but essentially make the client go the way that they feel most comfortable doing the marketing rather than exactly what could be done. And so I think that we find ourselves often even being, let's call it, humbled with the data telling a different story than what our opinions are, at least at first. And so maybe even this is another aspect of this question you asked. I think there's a big difference between agencies that have been around for 2-3 years and some that have been around for 15 years. Mm-hmm. The 15-year-old agencies have kind of already gone through all the muck and minutia and have a really great way to make things happen. They're not just trying to make a dollar. They're it feels like if you're around that long, you're genuinely trying to provide value, right? And you've got a lot of these agencies that are like just trying to hustle and make a few bucks quickly, and maybe their company won't last a year, maybe it won't last 2 years. That's not who you want to be with.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. I've got one last point to add on this, and I'm sure you'll have some, like, you know, insight or thoughts of your own too, but I feel like site transfers, migrations, updates is a big miss for a lot of.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I know that's a rabbit hole in and of itself. But, you know, this is a strength that I think, you know, having SEO and web design development, you know, as a skill set that you bring to the table all together really helps you see the bigger picture. Because, like, you know, I'll even say, as of this week, I heard, you know, in a conversation with a potential client about them making a shift with their website, and then saying they were reassured by their web company, who does not, you know, do SEO or have really maybe much basis of a knowledge with it, that, oh, they were making some changes, but everything would be fine. And that is terrifying. That is, like, probably the scariest thing I could ever heard, that somebody was reassured without any knowledge or expertise in the area that everything would be okay once they made a shift. I think one of the biggest things is that, you know, 301s are definitely obviously important to, like, you know, with site migrations, making sure that you're keeping, you know, that link juice intact. But it also, you know, site refreshes give that opportunity to, you know, really think about your content hierarchy, your URL structure. Are there ways to do things different and or better? And obviously, all those things are going to cause shifts. They're going to, you know, be things that you're going to have to, you know, consider during that process. But, you know, as opposed to just thinking about, you know, keeping things very status quo and doing a one-to-one or something, it's really a give yourself an opportunity throughout that process of a site migration to think about what is a more efficacious structure that I could put in place for, you know, the future, not just how can I, you know, one-to-one so I theoretically keep everything, as good as it was. So anyway, I'll always advocate for, make sure get 301 redirects in place, you know, do a screaming frog crawl, get, you know, understand all the pages that are actually being indexed, And there's so many things that I feel like are a part of that site migration that it helps to have that background understanding and knowledge in order to do it more effectively. And really, yeah, definitely try to, I know we were just saying that you can't see the future and you might have to follow a few rabbit holes in order to like get to the best place, but you can definitely put your best foot forward in terms of creating a better structure in a new website. And that's always a great chance to really, to do that. And then I'm going to put out this last thing here because I'd love your interpretation of this because, I always try to say, you know, what is it like when Google reindexes a site? And I've started to, you know, like phrase it as, you know, it's kind of like, imagine you've read the first edition of a novel. You get the second edition and there's new updated information, you know, there's new pieces. And I'm always like, you know, it's kind of like reading that second edition. You know what? There's some of the old stuff that remains and you're like, okay, this seems familiar. This seems familiar, but Google's doing the same thing. They're getting new information. They're getting new things. So yeah, they're going to have to say, okay, where do I put this? Is this in the same place that I thought it was? Does this thing point over here? And that is why invariably there's going to be some sort of like, you know, it's relearning the site, but you want to mitigate dips and stuff by making sure that you're putting good things in place. You're giving instructions to Google to say that, hey, if I am going to move this content or consolidate this content, you're trying to let them know those things. And anyway, so I've been boiling it down to, which is maybe an oversimplification, but like a first and a second version of a book. You have to kind of get back into it and be like, where was I before? Okay, now what's new?
Yeah. Look, I can't disagree with anything you said. I think you nailed it. But I think that what would be helpful is to bring up a few technical should do's if you're looking to make a site migration, right? And I think one thing a lot of companies forget about is this wonderful tool called Google Search Console that literally tells you how Google understands and views your website already. I would encourage anyone looking to do a site migration to look at Google Search Console first and see what are already some popular terms and things that you're already doing. What do you feel like are errors, or what does Google show as errors either on your sitemap or on your videos, or what's your performance look like? Once you've reviewed and have that information, at least a place to reference, because it's not the end all be all, it's just really good information. The other piece is that I think when you have an opportunity to either redesign or just maybe reformat some of your site, there's a couple of make sures that you have to have happen. One is how can you get to the most valuable information on your website in the fewest clicks? Mm-hmm. So don't bury it 3 or 4 folders deep. If it's really valuable, it should just be easy to navigate to. The second piece is that a big thing that has been, I would say, probably over the last 3 years that we've actively practiced is just because you have a ton of information doesn't mean that it's architectured or set up on your site structure very well. You would likely benefit from redoing some of that information, removing some of that information, or combining some of that information. And maybe you go from a site that has 500 pages down to a website that actually has 200 pages. And it's funny to watch when that happens, how much more Google likes you now and increases the value of your SEO and your rankings and your authority just from doing little simple activities like that. And then I think the last one is probably pretty elementary, but I see this happen all the time. In fact, we've talked about this with several people in the last month. And so it's sort of fresh in my mind. And that is that, let's say you're rebranding and you want to change your URL. Yeah, if you do it right, it's almost always a one step back, two steps forward scenario, right? You're going to have a small, and if you've done it right, it should be very temporary dip in your results. And that's expected. Mm-hmm. Depending on how you've done it, it could be 2-3 weeks, which is great. Or if it's terrible, maybe it's like 3-4 months, which is really terrible. And hopefully you learn your lessons. But the worst, I can't say that this isn't always bad because there are scenarios where this makes sense. But simply doing a domain forward as opposed to a page by page redirect, and just doing a domain forward, I don't know the right way to say it, but it's basically like you're lazy and you're making problems. If you want to do it right, run a Screaming Frog index, look at all the current pages, and then let's build out the new site. And let's make sure all the old pages have a new landing place to go. If you don't do that, you're absolutely missing out on passing on the link juice. And then doing your domain forwarding was of minimal value. In fact, maybe even hurtful. So those are the pieces that I have as far as technical, like make sure you pay attention to's that have been very big for us lately.
I appreciate that last one, especially too. Cause like, yeah, there was a project consolidating 28 global sites into one. And we took the time to create redirects and, you know, for all of those domains and path them directly into the page that they needed to correspond with on the new site. It took a long time. It took a ton of time. But, you know, the value of that is so important because otherwise, yeah, with a simple domain forward, you're washing a lot of work and effort and, you know, theoretically credibility, you know, with your site in, you know, I guess maybe in Google's eyes or whatever, it washes away, you know, and I feel like that is the thing that, yeah, I couldn't agree with more. It's just like, you know, I don't want to call those people lazy. Maybe they are just ignorant and they don't know that that is important to do that kind of thing, you know, but at the same time, it's like, if you know, and you don't do it, that to me is lazy.
That's a sin.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. SEO sins. Maybe that's a new domain that we buy, but all the sins of SEOs that do it wrong. But anyway, that's great. All right. Well, I know that we're time blocked a little today, and I'll open up another can of worms, even though I'm sure we could have riffed on that one for a long time. But privacy and cookieless is just one big overarching topic, and I feel like, you know, we're not going to be able to dig too deeply. So maybe what if we even just talk about the topic as a whole, the importance of cookie policies, about what it means to target when you don't have cookies. What are your feelings?
You know, there's a couple pieces that kind of roll into that. And a lot of times you can get that information. And I think what comes to my mind first, and I don't think this is an exhaustive list, but it's because you want to figure out some of the analytics of what happened, how did people find you, where did they come from, where did they go, what did they look at. And a lot of times that data is rolled into like retargeting campaigns, for example. Two things. One is that I absolutely believe there is a place for retargeting. I think it is helpful. It has always been one of the very least effective kinds of campaigns. Now, that doesn't mean it doesn't work. It's just usually the ROAS or the conversion rate from those retargeting campaigns is almost always on the lower performing end of the scale. So if those go away, I don't know that bothers me too much. I mean, look, admittedly, we run those campaigns for our clients. In some places, it does make sense, especially if there's like abandoned cart. But I think that is a segue into the next piece is that I think we're seeing a rise, at least I am anyways, and maybe it's just because it's been a more of a popular topic, where Google is looking to sunset some of these cookie-less or cookie tracking pieces anyways, is the rise of server-side analytics. And what's interesting is I think that would give, if you do that anyways, it gives you a lot more complete picture than what you can literally find from Google anyways. One of the biggest complaints is, why is there a dichotomy between what I'm seeing in analytics and what I'm seeing from this third party analytics and what I'm seeing on my server? Why are they all different? And what's the real answer? And I think that you will probably not find a more accurate way to get actual data than you will on server side analytics rather than the other way around.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, that's a really good point. It's such an interesting open, you know, sort of thing about like, you know, where this maybe like, you know, new sort of idea of tracking is going and like, you know, what data is going to be the most valuable or the most effective. You've brought up a couple of things, and I feel like it, as a whole, the third party information that maybe we, you know, had, you know, that maybe not necessarily ourselves, but like other companies maybe had formerly relied on, it going away. I know this may be like, you know, just like kind of blanket statement and maybe a little short-sighted, but I actually don't feel like it's that scary. You know, it does put more emphasis on like, you know, first party data. And like you mentioned, like, yeah, server analytics and potentially stuff that you're taking in yourself. But from that, you can create lookalike audiences. You know, you can do things. And I definitely appreciate, you know, Marianne Pruitt, who actually was, she'll be on another episode, hopefully right before this. And she actually touched on that as well, which I feel like is totally true. And the things that we now can target by, like, you know, interests and, you know, and sort of habits and behavior sort of oriented targeting, I feel like can mean more than some of like, you know, maybe the targeting elements we relied on from that third party data originally. So I don't find it that scary at all, but I feel like, yeah, I love seeing all the clickbait headlines of like, oh my God, what are we going to do in a cookieless world? And you're like, really? Come on.
So it's funny that you bring that up too, because the other piece that seems to always be ignored is that there are ways to do UTM codes outside of what Google provides, and you can always use that extra way to do tracking. But you know, to bring this maybe full circle, I think that if you are more focused on value-based marketing and what is the value you're providing or what are the issues that you're solving, I think you're going to be able to find that the cookies are just not that important. You can learn a lot about your audience. You can make those lookalike audiences, whether it's in Google with discovery campaigns or whether it's in Facebook with lookalike audiences. That's just one thing. You can get that info from either your server-side analytics, or you could do it through UTM codes. You can even make your own custom UTM codes that are not related to Google, even though Google makes a really great product and has a cool engine that makes that happen. I think if you just understand how some of those things work and you look into it, I agree with you. I am genuinely less concerned. I mean, we still perform really well, even after the iOS 14 update where they stopped tracking on iPhones. It didn't affect us even one bit. It's interesting. So I'm not too worried about it.
Cool. Great. Well, we're in the same boat on that. And I do. I feel like, yes, it's you know, maybe just slightly different in how you think about it. But yeah, I read this really good article you know, the other day about how people are very inclined to trust media resources that they consume, you know, really often. And, you know, this kind of relates a little bit to targeting and cookies and how you're, you know, sort of putting your messaging out there. But let's say that, you know, you wanted to sell a certain product for the kitchen or a certain food item, and you know that your audience is reading, you know, X and, you know, like food magazine. They have plenty of that first party data that they're going to be able to, like, you know, give to people that are on that platform. But again, that comes down to first party data. And at the end of the day, if you, you know, understand your audience and the media that they're consuming, and can put those sort of messages in the right place, you know, some of these things about acquiring this third party data, I feel like it just, yeah, it becomes less and less important and relevant. So anyway, I really like that article, because it's like, yeah, if I'm reading something in a magazine that I trust, I'm like, yeah, these guys are talking about something that I've seen, I'm interested in, and I trust their opinion. If it comes out of Motor Trend, I know I'm like just like an avid diehard Motor Trend person. Now they're changing the format of their magazine, of all things. But if they reference, you know, something in there, I'm like, yeah, I will trust their opinion. And I was like, yeah, it's you know, it comes down to the fact that that's where people put their trust. And it's good to have that sort of tracking information from them. And that's still first party data, and it's going to be more relevant, more accurate. And, you know, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, and this is a huge topic for another day, But I think it all comes down to how you make your audience feel, what authority they feel like you have. And that's one of the reasons why Google's so successful, right? Is because Google has, since 1993, 1994, has provided value. And so you know that when you go to Google and you search something, you'll probably get an answer. And likely it's a good answer, right? Because of what the way that they sort things out. Well, how can you be that for your audience? How can you be that trustworthy source so that whatever you say, they just kind of take with a sense of trust and believe you right away?
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. All right. Well, I'll note that as yet another topic that we need to dive into, but that this was great. Nathan, I can't tell you how much I appreciate, obviously, you know, giving me all your thoughts and stuff on all this stuff. And there's so much more to dive into, but this is cool. I thank you so much for doing this.
You know, one thing I think that we ought to mention, and I'm going to make a broad assumption here on your end, but I think that one invitation I'd like to give to anybody listening to this, if they've made it this far, is that if you have questions about these things, about anything that we've talked about, whether it's controversial or just because you want to learn more, I don't think that either you or I would have any quarrel getting on a 30-minute phone call to just hash it out and give our opinions, good, bad, or indifferent. And so an invitation out there is, if anybody wants to know any of this good stuff, Brent's the smartest guy. Like, give him a call and ask him any of these questions. He can lead you in the right direction. And if anything, the way that I like to do business is, I don't tell you that you have to sign up with me. I just want to give you good info. And if you decide that I'm the right kind of a guy that you want to hire, fantastic. If not, hey, no skin off my back. It's not a big deal. At least I've given you good information so that you can make a good choice, even if it's not with me.
I really appreciate that. And you too. I trust all of your industry knowledge, your expertise, and definitely how much experience, you know, you have in this field. So I'd encourage anybody to do the same for you too. It's interesting. And I'm also happy to play like devil's advocate with my own suggestions too. Not that I wouldn't give a person a recommendation at the end of the day, but sometimes you're tossed that kind of like, hey, well, what would you do in this situation? And you're like, well, I could rationalize it from this way. I could rationalize it from this way. But usually in a lot of SEO topics, sometimes there's not always one or a perfect answer, but you know, it's our duty, you know, to kind of give our best advice and our expertise and what we feel like is the right direction to head based on the situation. And I really appreciate what you just, you know, said earlier, which was just listening to the client. You know, if you understand that client and their goals and where they're trying to go, your recommendations to them are always going to be more competent. So, yeah.
Agreed. Yep. Well said.
Cool. Well, yay. All right. This is great. Hopefully people reach out if they take issue with some of the things that we said, and definitely happy to chat about it more. But, again, thank you so much for being here, Nathan. I appreciate it.
Yep. No problem. Let's do it again.
Awesome. Well, this has been another episode of Mix and Matchbox. I'm your host, Brent Feldman, and we will be back soon with more content. Please like and subscribe. Thanks.